Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. And I'm now here with the Writers Block crew, which comprises Nyx Gilvey and Full Moon Ancestry. So I'll go across the screen. So Full Moon first, why don't you introduce yourselves to the audience?
Hello, everyone. It is great to be here on Millennial with my friend, brother, and future ruler of Macedonia, Nicholas Gilvey, and the one, the only Millennial Woes. As for myself, I'm a wanderer, I'm a distant, I'm a white advocate. I am super lucky because I get to go to all the concerts, conferences, events, and I get to write for my favorite website, Countercurrents. I've got 54 articles up there, and I hope to have 54 articles more in the future. I met Nick at a Scanza Forum a little over last year. In Oslo, where Greg Johnson got arrested, and we've been brothers ever since. But I'll let Nick take it away.
Yeah. Well, as Full Moon Ancestry so eloquently put it, we are both writers. And when we got together, we thought, hey, how about we form a block, the Writer's Block? So that's the name of our live stream show here on DLive, right here on DLive, where we stream at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. CET most of the time. I believe Mondays and Thursdays and Saturdays we have our big show, which is usually a three-person panels, which is Full Moon, myself, and someone else at Countercurrents. He used to be Greg Johnson, but now he's overworked to certain degrees, so he's now taking Saturdays off religiously, I would add. But yeah, we are both writers for Countercurrents. This is how we got started. We met at the Skanza Forum in Oslo in the year 2019, and we struck up a friendship. And it was a professional relationship, but then I grew to really like this guy. You know, he's great company. He's someone I would trust my life to if we were to be attacked by Antifas. Which, you know, there's a story in there too. And now we're doing something good for our people. Now we're doing something good for our community here on DLive. We are building up a sort of you could call it a refugee camp here on DLive. Lots of people are running away from YouTube, from the censorship. And when we started our show, we thought, you know, why even bother with YouTube? We're just going to go straight to DLive. And that's how it got started, I guess.
Yeah, I think that quite a lot of people are making that transition, and it's not before time. I mean, I will be, this particular stream is going out on YouTube as well, but a lot of them, just to remind everyone, a lot of them will be only going out on DLive, because I think it's essential that we have to make that transition. I know it's annoying, but I just think it's necessary, especially if we actually want to speak about certain issues. I mean, it's just becoming so restrictive on YouTube. But anyway, we don't need to go on about that. You've suddenly removed your Santa Claus outfit and revealed yourself to be a normal mortal human being, Nyx.
Yes, I'm sure it's rather disappointing to all of the little boys and girls in millennial chat, but no, this is not the real Santa Claus. This is a very jaded writer for Countercurrents. He might have a slight drinking problem sometimes. Or, you know how, Full Moon, you say it better. You say it.
Well, it may not be Santa Claus, but we have jolly old Saint Nick right here.
Yeah.
So why don't we start with Full Moon, and you can talk about what people can find on your DLive channel.
Well, they can find the Algis room, which is that room that looks like that, and from the younger Futhark, the upside-down Algis room. So it's the life room and the death room, and as a writer on Countercurrents and a streamer on DLive, I write and talk about life and death and everything in between. I'm the luckiest dude in the world because I get to write about my favorite things in life. Heavy metal, whiskey, European history, medieval literature, mythology of our ancestors, the concerns of the day while trying to find some hope, inspiration for the future. I get to interview and hang out and kind of party streams with some of the my favorite content creators and community leaders. I've literally rubbed elbows with these guys at Etnu Future, Prabdimas, Lithuania, Scanza Forum, so many great, great people that I've not only been able to hang out with, but drink with, party with, but not share cheesecake. Because as everyone knows, I'm definitely a cheesecake addict and definitely have a sweet tooth.
You've also done a lot of traveling, haven't you? Because every time I speak to you, you seem to be in a different country.
You know, when people ask me, where am I from? I have to be honest and say, I'm kind of from everywhere and nowhere. I'm literally the product of white flight. Before I was 6 years old, I moved like three different places. At least in the U.S., I'm originally from the U.S. I've lived and worked in Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, California, Illinois, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Texas, Oklahoma, and in Europe. I lived in Norway, Denmark, Germany, Poland, Ukraine, Bulgaria. And I was spending almost this beginning of a quarter this year in Macedonia until COVID came over. I've just found myself being someone who tried to have a career but moved from place to place and kind of losing my position in a nice industry because of politics. I ended up just going from place to place, job to job, and I've kind of made a career and lifestyle out of it. I don't recommend it to anyone, but that's the life of a wanderer.
What would you say about how, I mean, obviously, I'm interested in your perspective as an American in Europe and traveling around Europe, but you've also done a lot of traveling within America. How much does the culture, and this is a very outsider's newbie sort of question, so forgive me, but how much does the culture differ from one American state to another?
I would say that when I was younger, I'm in my 30s, I always make the joke that I would see the cartoon of the Simpsons guy, like the crazy Texan who had the big white hat, the Cadillac, and he would shoot, yee-haw. I think when I was a kid, maybe you could go to Texas, you can go to Massachusetts, and you would experience different cultures. But as I've gotten older, I kind of realized that all the malls are the same. Every main street has the same fast food and dollar store. If you go to Texas now, it looks like Washington. It looks like Arizona. Everything kind of seems the same. And I spent Christmas watching millennial in Belarus, Hungary, and Moldova. And sadly, everything's starting to look alike there. In Belarus and Minsk, you'll see huge statues of communists, star and sickle next to Burger King and KFC. So sadly, you know, global homo, everything is looking the same, sadly. And I hate that. I want to see the difference between Norwegians and Swedes, Czechs and Slovaks, the difference between Romania and Moldova. But we're kind of losing that.
Would you say that the marginalizing of America was a sort of prototype for the same process in Europe across countries?
Sadly, yes. They say what happens in California happens to the U.S. and what happens in the U.S. spreads to Europe, sadly. And I do hate that. You know, I care about our white brothers and sisters in the U.S., but I've always had a hard time identifying with America because I was always the metalhead, you know, even before getting to politics. Like, America wasn't metal. You know, they didn't have medieval castles. I wanted to go to Europe and hang out with all like the black metal bands. I wanted to take poses in front of medieval castles. So even as a kid, a teenager, I wanted to go to Europe and hang out. So I never identified as American. But yeah,
I can see your dilemma because you wouldn't fit in with normal like mainstream Americans. But you're also divorced from Europe. So, of course, you must have felt a pull. And, of course, I can imagine that ordinary Americans would think you were crazy for being a metalhead, but also for feeling this pull to the old world.
Crazy, but that's how it goes. Yeah, I am kind of like in between. I never fit in, even when I lived in like places, like, you know, having Scandinavian and Finnic heritage. I didn't even fit in those places. I partied and hung out with people. But, you know, that is a thing. Best of both worlds, I guess. So part of me will always be American, but I do have a love for European white history, European white culture, and heavy metal music, which has a lot of white and European traditions in it. But I'll say this, you know, I've spent time in Macedonia, and I don't feel, you know, like a Macedonian, but boy, do I feel great being there with people like Nicholas Julvi, who are really fighting not only for their identity, but their land and their future. And this guy right here, I was very lucky to be involved in a political campaign, make a video that went viral. And this guy definitely made me feel at home in the wonderful world of Macedonia.
Okay. So, Nix, just to be clear, are you American or Macedonian? Because sometimes... go on.
Yeah, I'm Macedonian. Don't let the accent fool you. I've had people have been asking this question a lot, even in our own chat. I have an American sounding accent because I have no natural accent. This is the one just that takes me the least effort to have it. I think it happens when you're ESL, but you speak it with native level fluency, you lose your natural accent, and then, you know, but yeah, I am Macedonian. I've never even been to America. I've never been to an Anglophone country, never set foot in the United Kingdom either. Full Moon is a traveler, is a wanderer. But I, when we met first, I was amazed. Wow, he's been to so many countries. I don't travel a lot. I mean, I go on vacations. I like to swim. I used to play water polo professionally to some degree. So anytime I get near a body of water, I try to get in it, unless the weather is prohibitive. And so, yeah, that's the kind of traveling I like. It includes beaches, it includes cocktails, and it includes hotel rooms. I guess I don't have the spirit of adventure. I'm the static part of this machine, you could say. This is a pattern which we will keep on observing, this combination of moving and static parts. It worked for Alexander's army. It works for us. But yeah, I'm, you could call us... you could call me a politician. I ran for parliament in the Republic of Macedonia in March of this year. We failed to secure ballot access, but we had a lot of fun on the way. And since then, we've been just witnessing, you know, the classical Balkan Eastern European Third World just political crises coming in one after the other. And I've been trying to apply the lessons I've our friends and allies have learned in the West, in other countries, too, my own activism and, of course, analysis in Macedonia. And I've been trying to apply the lessons I personally learned through, because there's nothing quite like going through the political process yourself, the nitty-gritty of it. Like, maybe I can tell you about it, but I cannot, you know, just give you the feeling of driving elderly people to the polling station, because we're a small operation here. We didn't have dedicated, you know, party foot soldiers. I was the candidate, but I also drove people to the polling station in my private car.
Did you have any Dominion voting machines or postal votes?
No. In the savage and lawless Balkans, we vote by pen and paper. Because we believe that the old ways are best. That does not prevent election fraud, but it makes it a damn slight tougher. That's did I say a bad word?
No, censored. I think it's fine. I think we're okay so far.
Yeah. So yeah, we use pen and paper, and ballots are usually hand counted. Maybe this is an epiphenomenon. Maybe we have a smaller population, but if you get enough poll workers, you can count everything by hand. You can just circle the thing, fold it up, put it in a box, and way presto. You know, this is how voting was done for years. I never really understood the American fixation on, voting electronically or having voting machines. It was just too much complication for what is a very simple task. Go out. Circle the thing, fold up the ballot, put it in a box. But maybe that requires a certain minimum of IQ, which certain Americans of certain...
Well, yes. So, YouTube. This is a thing. I just can't believe that it's difficult to program a machine, a software to count votes. It just seems like possibly one of the most simple programming tasks. And yet you need a huge corporation to do it. And then the inside of it is just a black box, a complete mystery. No one knows how it works. Yeah, this is just incredible to me. But yeah, that's another topic altogether, I guess. So you met in Oslo. Now, I wasn't at that Skanse conference. I was at the one the month before because Frode heroically put two conferences on 2 months apart, and the one in Copenhagen. And that was, I was there, and we spoke at that one. That one got blockaded by Antifa. It was quite dramatic, quite ridiculous. I managed to get my speech done, but I think not everyone managed to give their speeches. It was it was amazing, really. And I know that similar things happened in Oslo the next month, including Greg Johnson got arrested on false pretext that he was an advocate of violence, when in fact he was, he'd read that his most recent essay was against political violence. It's quite amazing. So what did you see of that in Oslo, the two of you?
I was, I'll go first because I was at both. I was in Copenhagen, and the Copenhagen, I call it the siege of Copenhagen, the siege of Copenhagen, because as you know, millennial, it really was. And it was not a siege of, I guess, the cops arresting us. It was Antifa surrounding the building and the cops just kind of being hall monitors or yard duties, just making sure not that Antifa attacked us, but if we defended ourselves, the police would be there. And the whole reason I kind of got more involved writing and, you know, putting my face out there and my voice was I was asked to escort some of the elderly people to the train station, and the police were there, but the Antifa was as well. And the police didn't do the best job of keeping distance. So I had to kind of be the person in front to kind of lead and beg the police to keep a distance, but, you know, kind of protect our own. And there were people filming me, taking my picture. And I said, well, hell, I mean, I could easily be doxxed. So at that point, I kind of took more of an initiative to say, I guess I'm all in this now. And that's when I decided to start writing and put my face out there. And I started streaming with Nick earlier this year, and it's been a great ride. But it's one of those things I can't really recommend it, because this is a community. We try to, or should be a community, where we determine, each person determines their own involvement. And for guys with careers, families, livelihoods, it's difficult. That's not to say, I'm not saying don't go. I think people should go to these events. They should go to events. They should go to concerts. But there always is risk involved, and we should always determine it. As in Oslo, you know, these events, there is a threat, but it really makes life worth living. I mean, it made me excited. It made me feel like a superhero, like James Bond or something, you know, an action figure from Steven Seagal movie. And but it really was like a band of brothers. And that's where I met Nick. And I think that's why we have such a good banner, because we went through that. What's your experience from that or memories, Nick?
Well, what I'm going to say, like I said to Full Moon, I was there in Oslo. I was not in Copenhagen. I saw it when Greg Johnson was arrested. I was maybe the first to see it from just the crowd, not the organizers of the event, because I was peeking out the window, because I was never really afraid of getting doxxed. But I was peeking out the window when I wasn't supposed to, and I saw Greg Johnson being led to a police van and getting into a police van, and holy shit, what's going on? And then what happened was we were surrounded by Antifa, and we were in a venue which had, you know, the big glass windows. And so I said to Full Moon, you know, maybe we should act tactically and move the women and the elders to the inner aisle, because if these effers bust down the windows, I don't want them, because, you know, I had my wife with me at the Skanse event. I don't want her getting injured. I don't want someone elderly getting injured. I mean, I got a thick head. This head's been through a couple of doors. It can take an Antifa fist. I mean, I know how to fight, is what I'm trying to say here. And we motioned that to the organizers. We did that. And these people, and what I'm going to say is, it was different from Copenhagen, because from what I saw in Copenhagen, the police, the Danish police, just stood by, did nothing with Antifa, disrupted and, you know, prevented a lot of people from entering the event. But the Oslo police, did their job. You know, I mean, maybe it's a sad statement of the world we lived in that police doing their job, keeping the order, is an amazing and commendable thing. You know, it's a miracle. It's a scansa for a miracle, you could say, that the police in Oslo did their job. But they did their job. Greg Johnson, he was arrested more by a state security type organization, not the local PD. The local PD actually did a stellar job, and there's a privileged few who witnessed an Antifa being thrown into a police van like a sack of potatoes by two policemen because he was resisting so much. One cop got him by the legs, another cop got him by the arms, and it was beautiful. They just threw him into the police van like a potato sack. But then I said to Full Moon then, you know, this is the first time in many months that I don't feel like I'm under siege, even though we are under literal siege right now. But just being among your people, being free to talk, hey, we can have a conversation without fear of censorship. And it's in person, it's not through a computer. Because, I mean, no offense, Woz, but I've never seen you outside of a computer. I'm not sure if you're real or not. And I've seen Full Moon outside of a computer, but hey, haven't seen him outside of a computer since March. So it is problematic. It's not the same thing. When you're in person with like-minded people, it's an intoxicating, just feels good. You're just hanging out. Remember hanging out? Remember when we could do that? I miss hanging out.
Yeah.
And that's my sensation of what it was like. That's when they make the movie about our movement, they're going to have the segment, How Full Moon Met Nick. Well, that's the movie. That's the skinny.
Yeah. Well, Full Moon can vouch for me being real because we have met. We met, I can't remember if we met in Copenhagen, but we definitely met in...
Lithuania?
Oh, yes, Vilnius. Yes, Vilnius. And that was nice. That was a lovely, lovely city. And I remember we were at the restaurant together. So yeah, I am real. And, you know, please back me up on this, Full Moon. So
Not only is Millennial Woz real, he is a real inspiration to pretty much everyone that I've met in this community. It goes without saying that for most people that got red pilled between 2015 and 2016, they probably were binge watching most, if not all, of Colin's videos and all his trials and tribulations. He really put his heart, soul, and literally the kitchen sink in a bluish tint on the screen for all the world, all of us to kind of go through those times with. And of course, probably me and Colin have a different personality, we listen to different music, but it was such an honor to hang out with him, have a coffee, go do a Prabudimas and Lithuanian Independence March. Sveiki, labas vakaras, still our Lithuanian people watching. He's a great person. And if he didn't do what he did, there's a lot of people like myself that may not be doing what we're doing right now. And everyone I meet who says, yeah, I remember that video. Or, oh yeah, I loved when Colin said this. So without Millennial, without Colin, a lot of us probably wouldn't be here today. So you rock, dude.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to say that I didn't ask Full Moon to give me such a glowing review during the stream.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah. but thank you very much. One thing that does interest, based on what you just said, it's interesting that you were watching my stuff in 2015-16, but we didn't meet until late 2019, or early 2020, in fact. And it's interesting because people crop up now, still now, who I've never encountered before. And some of them have shows like you do. Others are anonymous. But it's amazing that it still happens now. You know, I still meet people now who have been in the movement or were at least watching my videos a long time ago, comparatively. I mean, you know, 5 years is a long time on digital media. So, yeah, it's a strange thing. It just keeps going, especially because after, you know, hold on a second, I'm just going to check something. Yeah, especially because I've had to delete a lot of my videos on YouTube. Sure. So I don't know what people are finding anymore. But yeah, on that matter, all of my videos will be on BitChute eventually. It's just a matter of getting that done. And it is quite a tedious task. I should have just had the channel mirrored automatically back when they were doing that. But yeah, I had an idea that I would remaster all of my, like, clean up the audio and all of my old videos, which is just kind of ridiculous in retrospect. But that's why I didn't just mirror them all at the time. But yeah, thank you. It is nice to know that I've had this influence. It's something that it always baffles me, honestly, because from my point of view, the channel, especially in those early 2 years, was therapy for me as much as anything else. So it's something I can never quite understand that was actually useful to other people as well. I mean, I tried to say things in a way that was understandable to everyone else, so that it wasn't just me talking to the camera and, like, with no regard for whether it was comprehensible. But even so, it was ultimately me working out a lot of problems, you know, whether it's emotional, psychological, or intellectual. And I think I should really just return to that instead of worrying so much about the movement all the time.
Well, I think that, you know, that was a special time, right? 2015, 2016. There were a lot of videos. I remember Red Ice. I remember, you know, back in the day watching the Swan of Tunola, Tina Veek now. Just her starting off. I remember Kittens in Your Face, Melissa Mishtaros. So there were so many people on YouTube. It was almost like the Wild West. And it was a golden period. And we can't probably go back to it. I know there's so much censorship. But I think it's always good to know yourself and speak honestly. And you've always done that, Colin. But my brother Nick here always speaks his mind. He's always himself, not only in person, but also in his articles. And I think what the 70, I can't probably say the topic, but the 73rd or 74th article that Nick's wrote is up today. Tell us about that, Nick.
Oh, well, you know, I really hate retelling what I write. If you're really interested, just go read it. It's about a very sensitive subject. If we're also streaming to YouTube, I don't know if we should broach it, but it concerns a certain population of people which may or may not
maybe not.
Sorry, guys. Regardless, yeah. Nick has a lot of great articles. He has 73 up, and I definitely recommend check him out. He's one of my favorite. I love everyone on Countercurrents, but he's one of my favorites.
All right. So one thing I wanted to ask you about Oslo, because you're from Macedonia. How would you, Nick, would you say that there are cultural differences? Because obviously Fullman was saying that things are becoming ever more the same. Would you say that at this point there are still cultural differences between European countries, especially Scandinavia versus, you know, the Balkans?
Yeah, definitely. Oslo is, I got an embarrassing admission to make. Oslo was probably the first destination I've been to outside of the Mediterranean basin. Not counting Paris, you know, and it was a genuine culture shock for me. How different it is from Macedonia. I mean, at one point, this is like a classic Mediterranean culture meets Scandinavian culture moment. My wife and I were talking, we're having a, you know, husband and wife type conversation about, I don't know, what are we going to wear today? And it's just, it occurred to me that people are looking at us in this strange way. And I just realized nobody talks at our normal conversational volume in Norway. We're just the loudest people on the streets. And it's a busy street. It's a major boulevard in the middle of Oslo. And it's, wow, I'm very conspicuous here. And then there's also, you notice you're dressed differently from everyone else. Everyone's wearing these utilitarian parkas and the big hats that cover their ears. I'm the guy walking around in a, you know, wool overcoat, like some, you know, just sweeping. I mean, I love my wool overcoats. What can I say? I love these large, luxuriant coats. I usually wear them. But yeah, you feel conspicuous. But unfortunately, I think it's because both Norway and Macedonia are a little bit out of the way. You know, we are a little out of the way. Neither Oslo nor Skopje are exactly major hubs of transportation and commerce. Now, if we were to make the comparison between, say, Stockholm and, I don't know, Belgrade, which is the capital of Serbia, I think we would find an eerie amount of similarity between, you know, or maybe make the comparison between Athens and Stockholm, Athens and Copenhagen. Because these countries are more integrated into the global system, they might be closer together. And what Full Moon said about basically you start to lose the difference between, I don't know, Austin and San Francisco and Boston and Seattle, you start noticing that with European cities. I mentioned Paris. I went to Paris and it did not feel French, and it wasn't just because of the non-whites. You know, there was also that. I was in Paris in 2012, and even then it was, you know, full of people who did not look French to me.
Well, that was the case even in the last time I was in Paris was 2002, right. And I was amazed at the diversity.
Right. And anyways, it wasn't just the diversity that made it feel un-French. There was a stench of globalism about the place, if you will. Everyone speaking English. I was polishing up on my German and what little French I had because I had heard that the French hate it when you speak to them in English. And I didn't see any of that. In fact, I saw a lot of Chinese people in just moving through the Louvre Museum, all of the touristic places. Paris did not feel French. And again, I'll say it, it wasn't just because of the diversity. And I noticed hints of it in Oslo, and I guess I noticed hints of it in my own hometown of Skopje, where just you get inundated with global brands, you know, Coca-Cola, and not just Coca-Cola. We used to have a McDonald's, it was closed. Now they're talking about, we should have a McDonald's and a Starbucks. And I'm like, do you people understand that we are losing what it means to be, you know, Macedonian? We are going to get sucked into this nothing vortex of basically, it's not even a good culture. You know, it's not like, it's not American culture. I've seen American culture. I've been around Americans. It's something bad, something bland, something very boring. It tastes like Starbucks, really, and no offense to the company itself, but you just don't make coffee as good as, you know, my local coffee stand where I buy coffee every day. There's just no charm to it, and you see that. You can definitely tell the major cultural differences between Macedonia and Norway, but for how long are we going to have them? That's a good question.
Well, Full Moon, it might be interesting to hear your opinion on that. Which countries, if you were to, you know, if there was some American who had never been to Europe before, what would you tell them as a sort of guide? What would you say to them?
Well, I think it really depends on the person and what they're interested in. I would say that, again, I'm not an expert at anything except having fun and traveling and being positive about our people. I would say probably Americans that don't speak another language other than English, maybe the UK might be an easy transition to them. I've always been a lover of languages, even though I'm horrible at them. And I always like being in a foreign language where I have to speak the language. And I love the Finno-Ugric languages. So for me personally, having lived in Latvia, having lived in Hungary, I like not speaking English, but it's tough because as I get older, I realize because of the internet, YouTube, social media, cell phones, everyone probably much 35 and under probably speaks English. But I have been in circumstances where in the weirdest of situations where someone 35, 40 didn't speak a word of English. And then I got to practice my Latvian. I got to practice my Hungarian. I got to practice Bulgarian, even. But usually the problem is, as an American learning a second language, it's like, oh, I'll just speak English. Oh, no, I'll just speak English. Maybe they want to practice their English. And the moment where you're used to it, then you reach like an old person at the grocery store. No, then speak Hungarian.
Yeah, so, but I want to know more about your views of European countries. So don't be afraid to go into detail. I'm interested in this because you've probably got quite a unique perspective on this.
I mean, I've dated women in Ukraine, in Hungary, in Latvia, and, you know, I mean, like anything else, it's kind of the same. Yeah, you create a dating profile and you sort through and you meet a woman. Maybe she speaks English, maybe she doesn't. And okay, so when I was in my early 20s, I spent a lot of time in Scandinavia, that I did start to notice the demographic changes even then in the early 2000s. And then the late 2000s, I spent quite a bit of time in Germany. And even I, in the western part of Germany, I started to know demographics. And even 2015, this is before the quote-unquote Syrian refugee crisis, I had started to see non-Finnic people in Finland. And I think it's just preference. I personally prefer being in Europe. I prefer it as opposed to the US. But, you know, there is no perfect place. There is no perfect person. There's no perfect woman. I personally enjoy being in Europe, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I am an American, but being an American now feels like being a Soviet citizen in 1990 or a Yugoslav citizen in 1991 or 1992. You feel like you're at the edge of collapse. You don't know how or when, but you do feel like something is going to happen. I kind of think that the US is like a zombie empire, a zombie financial empire, that it'll be kept up because it's so intertwined in our global economy. But maybe the ruling elite don't care about the founding stock and are maybe against the founding stock, people whose ancestors founded the country. So I don't want to say I hate America, but I just never identified with it. And while I always will probably be an American, I just prefer being in Europe. So I'm not the right person to ask. Sorry.
Oh, that's a shame. I mean, would you say that you have a favorite country in Europe?
That's tough because I've had, you know, good and bad examples or experiences in both. I would say that I really do enjoy Estonia and Finland just because of the language. And I think those two countries have a kind of intertwined culture with heavy metal. I guess that's the answer. Those countries where I've gone to more concerts and gone to more rock or heavy metal bars, that's just something that, you know, Finland, Estonia, Norway, Denmark, these are heavy metal countries. And of course, certain parts of Germany, I'd say Eastern Germany has more of a metal, heavy metal influence than Western Germany. The Czech Republic has a heavy metal tradition, but you know, you always do find pockets. But Nick, do you have a favorite country outside of Macedonia?
Well, that's a very good question. Italy. I'm just going to go out and say it. If I weren't Macedonian, I would love to be Italian. That's and specifically Southern Italian. Okay, Sicily. Those Norteños, they're a little bit German to them for my tastes. I'm a big opponent of work. I don't like working. I have a Mediterranean work ethic, which means that I consider work to be profoundly unethical. And in the category of sins against the self, you know, in the same category as masturbation. And so I try to do as little of it as humanly possible. And it's when I look at Southern Italy, and I've been to Southern Italy, I've been to Sicily. It's a place where I can live. It's a place where I can grow, spread roots is the phrase I'm looking for. It's a place where I feel I can have roots. Even you don't even have to speak the language. The interesting thing about the south of Italy, and in particular Sicily and Naples, from what I'm being told, they don't speak English, but they don't have to. You can effectively communicate using nothing but tone of voice and body language. This is sometimes considered an ugly stereotype. First of all, I think it's not ugly. I think it's beautiful. And secondly, it is far more true than people assume. You just make the right facial expression, you make the right gestures, and you have the right tone of voice. And an Italian, especially a Southern Italian, they will understand what you're trying to say. This is also true to a certain degree in Greece as well. Greeks and Italians, they're more similar than meets the eye. I mean, obviously, they are also similar to us Macedonians. We all do have the legacy of Rome, of Byzantium behind us. So, yeah, Italy. Italy, definitely, especially the south, which is basically a different country from the north.
What about you, Woz? Do you have a, sorry to cut you off, Nick. Woz, do you have a favorite country you always like going to, whether it's the food, the music, friends?
I really do like the Netherlands, but I mean, yes, I think the Netherlands would be the one. Yeah. I like Germany. I like any of the Scandinavian countries, all of them that I've been to, Denmark, Sweden. Norway, I've only been to briefly, very briefly. Those are very, they just feel very civilized and advanced. And I like that. Yeah, I like that feeling. And same with the Netherlands as well. It felt like this is a highly advanced country where things work. They've got it all worked out. It's good. I like that. And also in the Netherlands, I like the food and the people are very, intelligent and thoughtful, and they've got a sense of humor as well, which I like. They're not sort of dreadfully serious. So, and of course, this sounds dreadful, but everyone speaks English. So as an English speaker going there, it's just sort of effortless. And Amsterdam, I mean, everyone moans about Amsterdam, but I really like it. And not for this, I'm not a sex tourist or whatever, but I just like the, just to be clear, because that's what everyone says about Amsterdam. But I love the architecture and the layout and the feel of it. And again, it's one of those places. I was in Amsterdam in 2001, briefly. I think that was the first time I'd been there. And, it was... I think it's one of those places where you think, God, this would have been so nice before this era of globalization, this phase of it, when, yes, there would be a Coca-Cola logo here and there, but the place would still have very much its own culture and its own identity. And, I was there then. And it was different from how it is now. It's much more, it's like a party city now, where it was more, a bit more serene.
Its identity now is just, weed and hookers. Dude, I'm going to Amsterdam, weed.
Yes, it's yes.
Like, okay. This place has existed since before the Romans, and you're going there for the weed. I judge you harshly. I mean, what else can you really say?
Yeah, it is quite a haven for that kind of thing. One thing I wanted to ask you both about, because based on what Fulman mentioned earlier, that to be an American now, and this is obviously for Fulman, but I think that Nick's will probably have thoughts on this as well. You said that to be an American now is to be like it's like being a Soviet citizen in 1990, just before the collapse. But that refers not just to the collapse of the Soviet Union as a power and as an entity, but also to, I would guess, the sense that there's less of an identity attached to the Soviet Union because it was a manufactured thing, melding, like just colliding many different identities together and saying, now you're Soviet citizens, now you're communists. But as that starts to fall apart, as that looks like it's on at the end, obviously that you will feel that, and you can maybe feel ancestral identities or maybe just a crisis of identity approaching. And I think I wonder if it's the same for Americans now, because America, my feeling is, and this might be completely wrong, but my feeling is that American states, individual states, used to have more of used to be more distinct than the, culturally than they are now, and so you would be a Californian or a Texan or a Washingtonian. Don't know what the word would be. Whatever, and that would be an identity. But then that got collided together into the, you know, you're an American, and it doesn't even matter what your ethnic ancestry is. All of that's irrelevant now. You're a you're an American, and that's a consumer, and not much else. I mean, there's not much else to the America, the modern America, post-war American identity. There's not that much else to it. So, I mean, yes, guns and freedom, but that's not much. And I wonder if, you know, it does feel like America is teetering on the brink of some kind of collapse, regardless of how this election goes. In the next 10 years, I think that America is going to disintegrate in some sense. Fulman, you go first on this.
I left Macedonia right at the start of the COVID pandemic, and I was debating whether to leave because I was having such a great time and I love being in Europe. I don't really like going back to the US. Sometimes I have to get pulled literally tooth and nail, kicking and screaming, but I did because of the pandemic, travel restrictions. I want to check up on my mom. But the conversations that I had with my mom the 4.5 months that I was there really kind of summarize this issue or the question you just asked me. During that time, I had to explain to my mom that the country that grandparents came to, my mom was born in, the country that my parents raised me in, no longer exists. And that the morals, the values, the entertainment, the news, the media, they've simply abandoned white people and have turned against white people. And it's going to take, I don't know, I never even liked sports or football, but it's going to take a Hail Mary to try to salvage any of this. And even if a Hail Mary works and you can do this, you can do that, it's kind of like Humpty Dumpty falling down and all the king's horses and king's men can't put America back together again. And I know that sounds silly, but that's the discussions I've felt and coming to terms that, yeah, I know all the cool actors and musicians, and all the values, they've turned against white people. They've abandoned white people, and now they're actively against white people, whether it's our governments, whether it is the politicians, the corporations that you may have worked for, the law enforcement agencies that are serve and protect. Well, they never really serve and protect white people. They tend to serve the interests of corporations and protect the people that hurt us, Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And if we stick up for ourselves, then we get arrested. Then we get the legal book, the book thrown at us. Then we face a kangaroo court. And when we talk about clown worlds, well, gosh, sometimes we have to laugh instead of crying. And I've had arguments with my mom about these issues. My mom's the type of person that, you know, she thinks that, you know, it's great. She wants America to survive. She wants to, you know, ride the storm out. And while they say there's always hopefully a rainbow or a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow or a storm, I really don't think so. I think, as you said, America, like any empire, has spread too far, and the demographics have changed so much that America is now importing the third worlders, whether for jobs or cheap labor or votes. And they might replace us numerically, but they can't replace our values, our culture, what founded America. Sorry for the rant and rave, but that's how I feel. Nick, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, as I told Full Moon when we were having this discussion in person, believe it or not, well, there's a key difference between, you know, he always says, I feel like a Yugoslav or a Soviet citizen in 91. I say, but, you know, my parents were Yugoslav citizens in 91. And when Yugoslavia irrevocably fell apart, they were Macedonians the next day. and other peoples were Croats, you know, other people were Croats and Serbs and Slovenians and all of the other nationalities. And in the Soviet Russia, in Soviet Union, you know, one day you're Soviet, the next day you're still Russian, at least, you're still Ukrainian, you're still Lithuanian, right? What are you going to be when there's no America? You know, like we've been saying, there's no such thing as a Californian or a Texan or a Pennsylvanian anymore. People in the chat are disagreeing. They're saying that in small towns there is such a thing as a Pennsylvanian and a Texan and a Californian, and I hope this is so. But, you know, Woz and I, you and I both, we come from a neo-reactionary background, right? And when old structures fall down, they are not replaced by nothing. They're replaced by newer structures. So it's all fine. And this is, I mean, this is why the collapse of Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union, they weren't as bad because there were the structures of the federal subunits and the nations which comprise these federations to just take on the burden of organizing society, of imposing order. I mean, when the Soviet state was dissolved, it, you know, you still had the Russian state, you still had the Ukrainian, the Kazakhstani state, the Baltic states, the, you know, the Belarus. When Yugoslavia was dissolved, it was dissolved in, you know, horrible bloodshed, but there was still a semblance of order in the bloodshed, even in its most savage, it still resembled state-on-state warfare. It wasn't, except in Bosnia, which Bosnia was the most ethnically diverse of the Yugoslav republics, and its division was therefore, you know, the bloodiest. It's just 200,000 people dead on European soil, you know. People believed in the 90s that, what was that thing, the end of history? There would be no more war, no more whatever.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the Yugoslav wars happen. Okay, first it's the 10-day war between Yugoslavia and Slovenia. How many people died? 10? Huh, what's that? Then you get the Croatian war. You get, you know, ethnic cleansing on European soil. And then you get the Bosnian War, in which everyone just wants to forget. This was, you know, but people are still alive who were under siege in Sarajevo. People are still alive who, you know, witnessed brutality from everyone involved. I don't want to pick sides here, but this was a relatively orderly transition from a single Yugoslav state to six, you know, post-Yugoslav republics. This was relatively orderly by historical standards on how states dissolve, because we had the structure of the structures of these nations and their republics. What's going to replace the United States when everything goes, you know, tits up? People are praying for the cartels to take over just to have some semblance of order. And yeah, I don't know how much I can say. Why are we streaming to YouTube anyways?
Phil Min, what would you say about that in terms of America breaking up? How, if that were to happen, how do you think it would play out?
Demographics is destiny. They say that white Americans are maybe 55 to 60% of the population in the U.S. currently, but that's to ignore the millions of illegal immigrants and maybe the non-European people in the last 5-10 years. If you look at children age 6 to 17 in public schools, white kids in America of European background are already a minority. This is a conspiracy theory. This isn't the Great Replacement. This is reality. They brag about this. But when we talk about it, oh, then we're the crazy people. Then we're the conspiracy theorists. The only conspiracy is them, I don't know, having done this to us for, I don't know, the last several decades. But now the demographics have, or the chickens have come home to roost, sadly.
Yeah. Well, somebody on the in the DLive chat said earlier that, let me see if I can find this. Ah, yeah, here we go. I would say that there are six major U.S. identities: Easterners, West Coasters, Midwest, Southerners, Heartlanders, and Texans. That's quite interesting. I mean, this is something I do not have the experience of America or the knowledge of America to comment on this, but is there anything you would like to say about that, full moon? Easterners, West Coasters, Midwest, Southerners, Heartlanders, and Texans.
I mean, that sounds like a nice demographic kind of sorting. You know, maybe you can make advertisements for those groups if you're selling a different type of meal with a milkshake and burgers and fries. But from my experience, and this is just me, I'm in my 30s, people older than me, my age and younger, are now moving. If they want a career, they've probably moved to 5 or 6 different cities in their time. I've worked in the video game industry. I've worked in a translation industry. I've worked in Silicon Valley. And people lose their accents. People lose, you know, that hometown spirit. So yes, there are regions, but those differences are becoming minuscule and decreasing day by day. And I think the average person, millennial or Zoomer, is probably going to move around various times in their life. So I agree that to an extent, but what I've seen, those changes, those distinctions are fading away.
That is interesting. I mean, again, that is not the end of the matter, though, is it? I mean, it's an analysis of the situation and a prediction. But it's not, because obviously something is going to emerge. Something or some things have to emerge from all of this. And I guess it's kind of difficult or impossible to predict. But clearly things aren't going to continue as they are. And as Nick said earlier, you can be one thing one day and then you are something else the next day. It does happen throughout history. It always has happened. I mean, we can, on the one hand, identity is sacred, but on the other hand, it is actually quite, you know, in terms of the words that are attached to it, it can be quite changeable. I think this is a reality we're going to have to get used to.
Nick, well, do you think there's more of a stability in Macedonia for you? Like, do you think the average Macedonian, 20, 30 years old, can looks forward to a career, getting their own place, marrying a woman and having kids and stability the rest of their lives?
Well, that is a very good question. I mean, Macedonia is a poor country, but definitely you're far likelier to find a woman and marry her, because feminism is far less advanced in Macedonia. And thankfully, since our unpleasant jousts with Global Homo some 2-3 years ago, people are very soured here on everything that comes from the West, especially ethnic Macedonians. So, you know, feminism has taken a big hit. Women are slowly becoming, you know, more interested in Macedonian tradition. Men, obviously, too, because there's really nothing left for them in the modern world. And that is an escape hatch, which I think people who are not American have, maybe, you know, not even Anglo. You still have your ancient tradition. It's under 50 tons of modernist muck. But yeah, you can find it. It's still there. And when you have no way in the modern world, you can find that this tradition is still alive. We have the books. We even have the practices to a certain degree. I mean, if I was thinking maybe 2 or 3 years ago, before I believed in a political solution, about, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to go to the hills. I'm going to get my grandfather's land going. My grandfather has some land up in the hills. I'm going to be a farmer. I'm going to raise sheep, probably. And I went there and I scoped out the agricultural land. It is good land. And I talked to the locals. They were, you know, interested in helping me establish myself in the community. You know, the traditions of working the land, of living off the land, are still alive in Macedonia. For how long, I don't know. Now, eventually I decided against it because it occurred to me that I am a silky-handed urbanite. I have a master's degree in a very obscure field of the law, and I've been trained my entire life to be, you know, a latte-sipping urbanite who does not work with his hands. So what the hell am I going to do up in the hills? And obviously, I just got off my no political solution kick. It, obviously, I ran for parliament, so I believe in political solutions. But yeah, the tradition is still alive. This escape hatch is open to people who are not, you know, American. I'm just worried that maybe in America there is such an escape hatch too. Maybe the traditions of deep America are still alive under maybe not 50, maybe 150 tons of globalist muck. But even if a sliver of that is alive, and Full Moon has talked about not feeling America, this worries me. Because if Americans will not fight, you know, North Americans in general, if they will not fight for their land and their resources and their place on the North American continent, where do you think they're going to go? They're going to come to Europe. And to me, it was always, okay, maybe that's a good thing for the Americans. Maybe it's a good thing for us. But to me, it was always the Real Housewives of New Jersey occupying the Mezzogiorno. Can you really imagine Carmela Soprano in Naples or in Palermo? Or the thing that really got me saying, we must have a place for white people on the North American continent was when I thought of the entire Macedonian diaspora returning to Macedonia. These people, they've been in the West for so long. They're now culturally a little bit alien to us. And maybe it's prejudice, but I like them where they are. I like Americans where they are. I like Canadians where they are. I like Australians. I don't want them, moving to Europe en masse, because that would disrupt Europe. It would disrupt our culture. It would disrupt our ecology. I mean, this are like, how many people are in the white diaspora? You know, 300 million Americans, 100 million others. That's a lot of people. That's 400, 500 million people. I don't think Europe is very near its carrying capacity as it is, just agriculturally speaking, ecologically speaking. Culturally speaking, it would be a disaster. I mean, we are not Americans. A lot of Europeans find American culture distasteful, and especially people have been saying to me, but we got to do something. We got to move back to Europe. I'm like, can you really guarantee that there will be no mega churches in Prague? That there will be no strip malls in Naples? Can you really guarantee that to me if we accept these 300 million, you know, how many million white people are there out there? So this is why I understand ours is an international movement. I cannot just save my country. We got to save all white countries. Wherever white people are, we need to secure a place for them, land for them, the resources. So this is why it's a global struggle, even though we oppose globalism, ironically enough.
Yeah, wow. But women with a New Jersey accent, it's pretty sexy, right? I mean, Nick, I know you're happily married, but I find a woman with a Jersey, Italian Jersey accent.
No, stop sexy. It. That is not at all sexy. Strong disavow, hard disavow. Of all the American accents, I have to admit, I find the most attractive to be not the Texas accent, but the hillbilly accent, you know, of the Ozark and Appalachian mountains. Oh, yeah. Women with the hillbilly accent are very, I mean, when they speak to me and when they have all their teeth, they're very attractive to me. But the New Jersey accent, I only like it on Carmela Soprano, not on anyone else.
All right. It is a very legitimate question about how would Americans integrate into old European countries. I don't say old as a way to denigrate these European countries in any way. But the point is that, I don't know. I don't want to be disrespectful towards Americans or to American culture of the 20th century, and you know, now I don't want to be too dismissive of it, but it does seem quite hollow. And I think this is, I wonder, would they be able to deal with, you know, how would they feel about, you know, some statue of, you know, I don't know, some Renaissance artwork or something, or an old building. I think that select Americans can deal with that very well and like it and enjoy it, but I do wonder about the masses of Americans. It would be a strange episode. It might well come to pass, but I guess we'll find out. Let's end it here. because I think this is a good length for as an introduction to the two of you. So would you want to say again where, well, what the kinds of things, the kind of topics that you typically explore on your DLive channel?
I am the host of the Writer's Block, and we have great moderators, and we always have a great community where we celebrate white history, white culture, and most importantly, us white people around the world coming together, stick up for our land, our resources, and our sovereignty. Because despite the differences we've talked about today, we can have it all. We can have ethnic sovereignty with white solidarity and a whole lot of fun and positivity doing so. That's what me and Nick do every Saturday. I have guests on Mondays and Thursdays. I kind of have more of a party stream. Sometimes I'm drinking whiskey. Sometimes I'm playing music. But with Nick, Nick always gets awesome writers and people from Countercurrents. And I always look forward. It's a party as well. This is a different, more serious party. And I always look forward to chatting with Nick and always reading Nick's articles. I write articles as well, 54 articles. I try to write one every week. Usually they're uploaded on Mondays. So Full Moon Ancestor and Countercurrents, check it out. And Nick, tell them about the awesome stuff that you do.
Well, I appear every Saturday on the Writer's Block with my friend and co-host, Full Moon Ancestry. We have a three-person panel, like I said in the beginning. It used to be Full Moon, myself, and Greg Johnson. Now we rotate the third panelist every Saturday. And beyond that, I do a Macedonian language stream with my friends of my political movement here, the Boycott Movement. There is a story behind that name, but I guess we're out of time. And also, like I said, I write for Countercurrents. I try to be active in as much as it is possible in the various Telegram groups. They're very great fun. You can follow me on Twitter, but don't take me seriously on Twitter. I usually use Twitter to just spitball ideas and goof off. We'll do a little shit posting every now and then. But those are my activities. I avoid work like the plague, so I'm always online. There's that.
Sorry, right, okay. Excellent. Well, I think all of those links were in the description. I put them in at the start and I forgot about it. If they're not there, I will add them now. So, excellent. Well, okay. I hope this has been enjoyable for the two of you.
Right. Most definitely. Thank you so much for inviting us on. I look forward to all the episodes of Millennial, and thanks to all the awesome people in the chat. And thanks to you, Colin. You rock.
Oh, thank you very much, Philman. And thank you, Nix. And I'll see, let me see, I've actually already forgotten who's on next. So let me just, let me see. Ah, it's Thamsir Witnat. So that should be interesting. Yes, I think that should be safe for YouTube. Okay. All right. Well, I'll see you all later. And Philman and Nix, good luck. And I hope that you get some more new subs on the DLive channel. And people will find your articles in the links in the description. All right. Thanks very much, and I'll see you all later. Thank you for that.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.